So I'm delighted to be joined today by Professor of Education at the National College of Art and Design, Gary Granville. Gary, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Today our topic is creativity and creativity in the curriculum. And to get us started, maybe Gary, you might tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, my background is I've been working in education in one shape or form all my working life. But my main field has been curriculum development. And I spent the earlier part of my professional career in curriculum design and was for the best part of 11 or 12 years assistant chief executive in the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment, the NCCA. And in that role, what we were doing through the 80s and 90s was redesigning the shape of the curriculum at primary and at post-primary level. So when it comes to the issue of creativity, I'm very interested to revisit some of that, some of those questions of curriculum design, and to see how they impinge upon the creative classrooms.
Sure. And I suppose a lot of people would associate creativity with the arts. And now you're Professor of Education in NCAD. So how does the creativity come in there?
Well, I think clearly the arts are the home of creativity, I suppose, and the visual arts, the expressive arts generally. But I suppose a fundamental point that I would like to make is that creativity cannot be and should not be understood simply in terms of one subject or one domain of activity. That there's a generic form of creative dispositions that all teachers should be engaged with and all learners should be applying within their process of development. Now, having said that, clearly there are some subjects which by their nature foster and indeed depend and are defined by a creative process. But all learning activity is inherently creative.
Sure. And I suppose the notion of creativity in our society seems to be very current at the moment. As we sit here this evening, and it's the end of July. There was an article recently in Newsweek entitled "The Creative Crisis," and there has been quite a lot of discussion in the US in the last couple of years around this whole skills for the 21st century and creativity being one of those skills, and more or less implying that we should be teaching creativity. And do you think we can create creativity? And I suppose even before we get into that, what do you define as creativity?
Well, I think that it is easy and it is in some cases dangerous almost to have too absolute a definition of creativity. But I think creativity is essentially concerned with the capacity to foster independent thinking and the capacity to develop solutions to problems or to issues which are not unitary, which are not the single correct answer. But to be able to make responses to situations which are generated by independent thinking, autonomous thinking, and collaborative thinking. Because creativity and the creative process is not purely a solo run.
Sure.
It's also involved with teamwork and collaboration. But the idea of being able to address issues in ways that are innovative, that are not prescribed by a formula and by a set procedure. And I think one of the challenges for us in education today is that the more specific we become in defining our curriculum, in defining the outcomes that we expect from the curriculum, and in defining what the end product is likely to be in terms of examination results,
yes.
The more sophisticated we become at that, perversely, the less creative we become, and the constraints we put on teachers and on learners, I think, is a major challenge for us now.
And it seems to me that there might be a contradiction happening. That it seems in the literature we want a more constructivist, problem based curriculum where children are working together in teams and collaboratively. Yet, on the other hand, there seems to be a focus on curriculum planning to go for learning outcomes and...
Yep.
Is there a contradiction there?
I think there is a contradiction. There shouldn't be, but there is. And I think the problem comes by getting too specific in our definition of outcomes. Yeah. So that I think it is desirable and important that we set out large-scale outcomes of what our programme, what our learning for this year, for this term are to be about. What broad directions are we setting out? But when we become very specific to say that we are going to learn A, B, C and D, and that level of specificity encourages the teacher and the learner to focus only on those, say, four outcomes and nothing else.
Sure.
I think a key thing that we must, as educators, retain is the capacity to surprise ourselves, to come up with solutions that we had just not envisaged, directions indeed that we had not intended to take.
Yes.
And if I in recent years have taken to looking at two examples of where I think really exciting work has been done by teachers in Irish schools.
Yes.
At second level, and our second level system is frequently criticised and legitimately so, but mm-hmm. I think there are two areas that give us real hope.
Sure.
One would be in the area of the transition year. It's a sort, yes, of a cliched response at this stage, but I think there's really valuable work done in there. Mm-hmm. And the key point that I'd say there is that that's an example of a programme which is not defined by very specific examination or assessment outcomes.
Yes.
There are broad outcomes stated.
Yes.
And how we get there is a journey that every school and every teacher and every class follows separately.
Sure.
And by contrast with that, another example would be the Leaving Certificate Applied,
yes,
programme, yes, which is generated on an entirely new platform of thinking, another way of working. And the work done by students on that programme has generated really interesting achievements, not least in the capacity of people to be able to articulate, to be able to talk, sure, aloud about what they're thinking.
Sure.
And LCA students are really good at that, yeah, really good at reflecting on what they're learning.
Yeah, and we've actually had some very positive experiences here in the Digital Hub with the LCA. We had a group of students from a local school here a couple of years ago,
yeah,
who actually created a project around, they created a walking tour of the Digital Hub. And these were a group of students, and just they fit the mold that you've just described. They were a group of students who I think had trouble succeeding in school, but it was a project-based learning approach, and they all, as a team, they got an A on this particular project, and their self-esteem, and you know,
that's exactly it, know. Yeah, and it's one of the greatest disappointments that I'd say that our process of curriculum change has generated really imaginative work at the margins, shall we say.
Exactly.
And work being done with the LCA, like you say, with students who would frequently and in the past have been seen as not the real academic materials.
Yes, yes.
But the work being done with those and the work that they are achieving is outstanding.
Yes.
But we haven't cracked the central pillar,
yeah,
the Leaving Certificate, the traditional established, yeah, Leaving Certificate, which in itself is dominating the junior cert and increasingly what goes on in the senior classes of primary school. So
absolutely, but I think, and I think that, you know, again, there seems to be this issue here that society, well, particularly industry now,
yeah,
are calling for, they want more creative, and particularly in a knowledge economy, creativity and innovation are seen to be as very desirable among a school population. And again, I go back to harp back to the Newsweek article, basically, you know, a crisis, because and I think that the reason there is because it's seen as an economic issue. Do you think we can actually prepare our teachers to be more creative, and can we get the system to recognise creativity more?
I think I think there is there are two issues there. I think one is to say that as educators, we need to be a little bit cautious in responding to the changing winds that blow from industry and the
sure.
economy.
Absolutely.
And certainly that there is a cry now for the development of creativity or entrepreneurial mm-hmm. skills and so on, and quite legitimate and quite yeah. right. But creativity is also a personal process. It is a form of becoming oneself, of finding out who you are,
sure.
and that's a deeply personal and mm-hmm. truly educational process, not just economic. But they're not irreconcilable. Quite mm-hmm. the opposite. They should be happy bedfellows. But I do think there is a need for us, and it's a challenge that we really need to address and are capable of doing it, mm-hmm. To be able to incorporate or to change our model of curriculum and examination
yep.
to incorporate a recognition of the creative process. And again, to give an example, as you said earlier, I'm head of the Faculty of Education in mm-hmm. the National College of Art and Design. Within the NCAD, we've been looking at how best we can facilitate entrance, people coming into the college, in developing their art and design sensibility. We'd be very anxious to have a leaving certificate program in art and design and in design and communications technologies and mm-hmm. that suite of subjects, which upon which we could base our selection criteria. But at the moment we can't, because the Leaving Certificate Art exam is a model of learning which doesn't do justice to the process of a creative approach to art and design. Mm-hmm. We have introduced in recent years as a selection mechanism, a portfolio brief,
mm-hmm. yes.
Which presents some situations to learners and asks right. them to say, okay, come up with the response to that.
Right.
We don't have a right response. There isn't a correct response to
yes.
that.
Yes.
But there's a number of tasks set for them where they are asked to in some cases, there would be clearly a fine art orientation.
Sure.
In other cases, a design, a technical process. But in every case, they're asked to develop ideas and to argue for them visually and to present that work in visual form.
Mm-hmm.
The results are astounding and really interesting. Just in seeing how different people come up with different approaches, different responses. What we're anxious to do is to see, well, how the next step that we want to take now is to say, well, how can we facilitate incorporating that sort of approach into the Leaving Certificate exam?
Yes.
And I think that's something that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
It does open up our model of what an exam might be, because this is not something that you can just sit down over 2 hours and just do.
Yes.
It's a project that you take on and, mm-hmm. and you work on. But if we can't do that in art and design, God knows.
Yeah. Well, it strikes me that we're talking here portfolio assessment and we're talking over time.
Yeah.
And groups, I don't know if you're familiar with them, Edutopia in the US, for example, they're very much promoting that whole projects.
That's right.
And the notion of assessment.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
again, you're linking the curriculum and the assessment.
Exactly. There is a challenge and an opportunity in doing that. The challenge is to manage it in such a way that we recognise the time constraints. We can't have mm-hmm. students working on projects full time in a range of different. I mean,
sure.
students do six, seven, eight subjects for the Leaving Certificate. So
we have to
be measured in what we mm-hmm. demand of them. But undoubtedly, the real process of learning is something that takes place over time and cannot simply be assessed on a one-off final exam.
Sure, and I suppose, but going back to this whole notion of you're selecting students to come into an art and design college, but surely a phrase I've come across recently, passion-based learning, right? So if you really are passionate about the arts, that you would actually probably enjoy spending extra time and putting it in, and it probably would show commitment to me. Would it,
well,
do you
I think that absolutely, and we can see that that students engage in portfolio preparation for us. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do, and they give it that time, yes. And they choose to give it that time.
Yes.
One of the great satisfactions one gets as a teacher, for instance, and you'll often hear teachers talk about this, art teachers indeed in particular, but teachers of any subject, is when they're working with young people in the classroom and they haven't finished when the bell goes, as it were, mm-hmm. that the kids come back at lunch break or stay
yes.
on
yes.
through their break, which is exactly that, where the work itself is its own reward.
Absolutely.
And the students do it.
Real engagement.
And one of the things, again, and this is, I would feel it's a sort of a missed opportunity that people, that the Minister for Education didn't take, and maybe she still might, mm-hmm. is in recent months, there's been talk, and not beyond time, for a review of the junior certificate.
Absolutely.
And where that stands. And I think that's certainly important. But in launching that review a couple of months ago now, the Minister said that she wanted to reassure people that the junior certificate would not be abolished, you know?
Yes.
And I instinctively felt that why do we write that out as an
yes.
option right from the start?
Absolutely.
One possibility or a scenario that I could envisage would be that we would change the nature of our junior cert, maybe mm-hmm. not abolish it as such, but certainly change the nature of it so that all the work that gets done in those early years of post-primary mm-hmm. schooling would be project-based, would be defined more by each individual teacher, each individual classroom.
Yes.
Which in itself then could give you the platform for a more systematic approach at leaving certificate. But at the current model, where the junior cert is just a version of the leaving certificate,
yes.
is the worst of every world.
Absolutely. And I suppose just looking at it from a teacher's point of view, I think, you know, from our own experience, we kind of sometimes feel that teachers are a little afraid, actually, of they're so used currently to preparing for that exam and those narrow learning outcomes that they struggle then when we ask them to take on a project-based approach. And I wonder, you know, you're preparing teachers down in the college and there are other colleges doing the same. Can we actually prepare teachers to be more creative teachers?
Can we
teach creativity?
Well, I think we can. I'm convinced, and I know that we can.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't teach creativity in the same way as we teach spellings or
yes.
that we teach a traditional mode of learning. But we can teach in such a way that we foster creativity. And a key thing is, and you've touched on it in that comment, is confidence.
Yes.
What we want to develop in our learners, but especially and initially in our teachers, mm-hmm. is the confidence to try things and to fail.
Yes.
And not to always get the right answer.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's why I would look at, say, the junior years, mm-hmm. junior certificate years in junior cycle as being a real opportunity for people to experiment, to try out things, both the teacher and the learner, and not always to be successful, not always to have the product at the end that works for you.
Yeah.
But confidence only comes by going through a process of failure,
yes.
and learning from that and seeing how best we can attempt it again.
Yeah. No, I'm nodding in violent agreement here, because just before we did this podcast, and we'll put a link to this, I went back and had a look at Sir Ken Robinson's infamous now probably YouTube video on Do Schools Kill Creativity, and he touched on that very point about the fear of making mistakes. And it seems like a lot of what we've been talking about, you know, the fear of making mistakes and the not one right answer, that these are things that are trying to be incorporated into new curriculum programs like Project Maths.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they're definitely steps in the right direction. It's probably more of that we need.
It's more of that we need. And we also just need to kick it through a little bit, because
yes.
I mean I was doing some work recently in a different context, but it brought me back to reading a document that I co-wrote myself back mm-hmm. in 1986, I think it was. It was
which was a good year. I started in the teaching profession in that year.
That's right.
Long time ago.
Downhill since.
Oh, God.
But even back then, and it was a document for the curriculum and exam board, as it then was, but
yes.
It was just in its final report. And in the introduction to it, that there's a short paragraph which talks literally in the terms that you and I are talking about now, yeah. Michael, the need to foster in teachers a confidence, mm-hmm. To overcome the fear of failure,
yeah.
And all of that, and that was the rhetoric then. Now that's over 20 years. That's nearly a quarter century ago.
Yes.
So I suppose my recurring mantra almost at this stage is that, and I would be critical of myself in saying this, is that I think we have changed the rhetoric of education,
mm-hmm.
but we haven't changed the practice.
Yes.
And it's not good enough for us to be producing really elegant curriculum statements and objectives. And we have good, and I don't decry it, and God knows I was...
part of it for a while.
Part, yeah. of it, indeed. So I'm not being critical of others. But there is, we have failed to deliver. We have mm-hmm. failed to drive it home.
Sure.
And I think we do need, particularly those of us in teacher education, both in pre-service and in-service, mm-hmm. we need to be pushing that further. And ultimately, it is to break that stranglehold of the examination system.
Absolutely. And it sounds, though, and maybe we might finish on this, that this is a change process, and we're talking about implementing change, and change is hard. And have you any thoughts? I know teacher professional development is one piece of it, but surely there are other bits. You know, I hear about the State Exams Commission sometimes. Maybe it's easy now, we can blame other people, but what do you think we need to get this to happen?
Oddly enough, I mean, I think change is hard. Change is a process, but I think what we need to do is to empower, and I hate using these terms because they're so cliched now,
yes.
but that we need to liberate local initiatives.
Yes.
Too much of our change process has been at system level.
Yes.
So we change the curriculum, we introduce a new curriculum body, the NCCA, yes. and it's yes. a radical and a new dawn. A new examination system, a new examination model through the State Exam Commission. All doing good work,
yes.
but it's all at a macro level. Mm-hmm. And we need, and perversely, that has disempowered teachers.
Yes.
Teachers, when I started teaching, which would have been even before you, back in the 70s, teachers had we didn't know it then, but we had a lot more autonomy over what we could do.
Yes.
Nowadays, for all the rhetoric, there's much more uniformity, much more standardization across what is taught and how it is examined, much less professional autonomy for teachers.
Yes.
So I think what we need to be doing, that those of us who are working in education need to be almost subverting the process of encouraging local groups to generate local responses and to have the confidence to take that on themselves.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent place to finish. And I think some recent documents I've seen from the NCCA make that point as well.
They do, yeah.
You know, that we do need mm-hmm. to probably give trust, more trust back to the teacher. They are the professional at the end of the day. Yeah. And to give them that confidence that they won't feel that, you know, I hear too often, will it give an A in the exam? You know, we do some work at post-primary level and this is asked.
Yeah.
And it could be it's a project-based learning approach, or it could be a new mm-hmm. device.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it won't. It's not a magic formula.
That's
so,
right. That's right.
You know, and it's that tension, isn't it? Or
it's always there. I mean, and there is a tension. And, of course, you recognise it, and you know, as a teacher and as a parent, you always have that push and pull, as it were. You don't want to disadvantage the people that you're working with, but I do think there's a lot more creativity that we're not tapping into,
mm-hmm.
which is compatible with success in traditional academic terms, and can enhance that level of success.
Brilliant. Gary, thank you so much. That's been fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Thank you.